Welcome back to the Rewind That Tape podcast. I'm Jay Prebs.
And I'm Dr. Cash.
And today we're here with another weekend wrap-up and headlining the news pretty much everywhere. NBA finally back into the spotlight, and it is that final piece of the puzzle. I mean, to be honest with you, I feel like I've been waiting for this trade for about 2 months, but Damian Lillard finally traded off the Blazers. He's heading to Milwaukee to make, one of the scariest pairings since KD Curry, I feel like, with Giannis.
Yeah, I think for me, the Bucks was like completely out of the blue when I saw that.
100%.
But, I mean, it makes so much sense for them. I mean, yes, you had to give up a key piece of that championship run in Jrue Holiday, but you got one of the greatest point guards of all time in return, who makes not only the Bucks a much better team, but also complements Giannis's game so well. I mean, if you think about it, you have Dame outside the perimeter and Giannis inside the paint. I mean, there's really no stopping that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you look at how the team is built, Giannis just feasting on the spacing, because the spacing is going to be probably even better when they had Jrue Holiday. And Dame just, it's like hard to like kind of wrap your head around, because Dame is such a good offensive playmaker, such a good shooter, scorer, passer, everything. He's just going to elevate this team to like, I don't even know where, because his defensive deficiencies that he may have, that kind of you saw on Portland, they had to make up for that. It's not going to really be present, because you have guys like Giannis, Brooke Lopez guarding the paint. Then you have Middleton. You have these legit defenders who can kind of pick up the slack, which is, in my opinion, a little bit of what they're missing in Portland.
I feel like that what a lot of people looked at initially when the trade details were finalized was that they lost so much on defense with Jrue Holiday. And I get it. Yeah, he's one of the best, if not the best, defensive point guard in the league right now. Great two-way player. But I mean, what you're getting on the other side of the ball just completely outweighs that. One of the deficiencies, like you're saying, for Dame defensively was that he's able to get blown by quickly. And he can get blown by quickly in Milwaukee, and Giannis is standing there right there in the paint, or Brooke Lopez is right there in the paint. So I feel like those flaws won't be as noticeable in Milwaukee.
Yeah, for sure. I agree that, like, I mean, we're both saying the flaws are not going to be that visible. And just taking a look, he's a consistent 38% three-point shooter, and that just, I mean, I don't know, man. That just opens up the floor for so many different things on this offense, because you can now, you don't have to run your offense through Giannis, who, as we know, primarily is a transition player who gets ahead of steam and absolutely attacks the paint. Now you have Damian Lillard, who you can run half court sets through him in the pick and roll with Giannis, with Brooke Lopez, is going to be dangerous. It is going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, and they now have two of the best threats, both inside and out of the paint. So, yeah, that fast break is going to work really well in Milwaukee. But for me, I think one of the interesting parts of this trade was seeing DeAndre Ayton end up in Portland. I think that's going to end up working out really well for him. He has a lot of time to grow. He's got a bunch of young teammates with him, Shaedon Sharpe, and
Scoot.
So I feel like with Ayton's abilities, we've seen it in Phoenix, he's able to expand that with less pressure, because a lot of the hate he was getting while playing in Phoenix was especially during the playoffs, just not being able to defend for a 7-foot center.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the pressure of having to compete and win basketball games, be championship contenders every single season, every single game pretty much. For someone like Ayton, who I feel like is not fully developed, who hasn't reached kind of that pinnacle of his game, I think going to Portland is going to be a reset for him, allow him to work with, like you said, a young team with guys like Scoot and mentors like Yusuf Nurkic, Jeremiah Grant, people who can kind of help him grow his game, people who have been around the league. And I think that's pretty important. But, I mean, we have to talk about this. Portland, they get, like you said, DeAndre Ayton. They got Jrue Holiday. Milwaukee's 2029 first-round pick unprotected and their 2028 swap rights. And after maybe a few hours, I would say, a day at most, Jrue Holiday traded to the Boston Celtics for another massive package. You have Boston sending Robert Williams, Malcolm Brogdon, Golden State's 2024 first, and another unprotected 2029 to Portland in exchange for Jrue Holiday. And, I mean, just wrapping your head around this haul that the that the Blazers have turned Damian Lillard into. I mean, you have two arguably of the best defensive centers in the league in Robert Williams and then DeAndre Ayton, who obviously not best defensive center, but one of the best centers, young centers, two of the best young centers in the league. You get three, four first-round picks in the next 5 to 6 years, and then you get Malcolm Brogdon, who, I mean, you could flip him for another first round.
Yeah, exactly what I was about to say. They're going to end up turning Brogdon into more, which is even better because, look, looking at the roster, they're obviously trying to grow their youth, Scoot and Shadon Sharpe. So, yeah, they're going to end up getting, I'd say, a pretty good deal for Brogdon. You know, he's still got a lot left in his tank. Won sixth man of the year. So,
and I mean, like, to be honest with you, I think they could, if they keep Brogdon, I mean, I could see them competing. I mean, Anthony Simons, who is, in my opinion, one of the most underrated guards in the league. You have guys like Shadon Sharpe, who, in my opinion, played really well in that second half of the season, kind of found his legs, found how to play the game. And then you bring in Ayton, you bring in Robert Williams. If you keep Malcolm Brogdon, I mean, I think this team could be a play-in team in the West.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think the way we saw Shadon play, at, like you said, post All-Star break, it was pretty insane. You know, he was getting up to averaging 20 a game, had the ball in his hands, was able to control the offense. And this Portland team could definitely be scary. The only concern right now, which, I mean, it really isn't because this team just doesn't have the urgency to make the playoffs right now, is their defense. You know, being on such a young team, I think we've seen these past few seasons with, like, Rockets, Pistons, Magic, you know, their defense just isn't the best. And that's just because it's harder for younger players to adjust to the game in their first season, second season. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think they won't be a team that's like dead last in the West for sure.
Yeah, I think that the West is going to be a lot of fun to watch. As a Rockets fan, I've kind of been scoping out the prospects, and it looks like there's maybe one or two teams that are tanking. Every other one has a legitimate shot at make the playoffs. But I know the biggest after this trade, the biggest arguments. Biggest conversation is around the East, because obviously that's where Holiday got sent, moved to, Dame got sent to the East. And Cash, do you think the Bucks are the undisputed number one team in the East right now?
I think without a doubt they are. I mean, they just have a pretty good bench, mix of veterans, and with Dame, I mean, it just opens up a whole nother dimension offensively. But I'm gonna say the Buck. I mean, excuse me, the Celtics aren't too far behind them. Holiday for me is that perfect piece that they needed. Look at what their roster last year. They had Marcus Smart bringing the ball up the court, and for me, he's not a true point guard. He's not able to make plays like Holiday is. Yeah. While their defenses are pretty similar, I think Holiday just being able to manage the game as a true point guard will really help this team. And with the addition of Porzingis, makes it even better for pick and rolls.
Yeah, you definitely found your replacement for Marcus Smart. But as much love I feel like as the Bucks are getting, as the Celtics are getting, I don't know. I personally feel like we should be giving the Cleveland Cavs a little bit of love. I know.
Really?
I know they kind of sold in the playoffs, but man, I really think this team, I know we're turning this into a little bit of a Cavs session right here, even though they had no significant moves at all.
That's what I was about to ask. Like, what in the offseason kind of made you? But
this is what I'm saying. I'm saying Evan Mobley, give him another year to grow. Year three, this is when you really start to see him getting into his offensive bag. He's a 6'11 power forward who can move like a shooting guard, basically. Another year with Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, who, in my opinion, are the best two guard pair in the league. And I mean, yeah, I think they have stacked a bench. I think if Donnie comes to play, if Garland comes to play, and if Evan Mobley is who the Cavs picked him at number three to be, I think they could challenge for. I think they could challenge the Celtics for the number two spot in the East easily.
That's a pretty hot take. I don't know what I saw from Cleveland in the offseason. I saw Tristan Thompson.
I mean, I don't think you need to see anything from them in the offseason, though, because they are a young team, developing team. They don't need to add. They have vets already on the team. They need to make internal improvements. I think that's what we're not seeing this offseason. We're not seeing the internal improvements that they're making, because that's just going to show itself on the court when they come to play.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. That's a fair point.
Exactly. And I mean, you could say that with every team, right? But this is a team that has been to the playoffs before. I mean, in my opinion, probably a little bit ahead of schedule. And now they know what to expect. They have a coach who, in my opinion, is pretty good. JB Bickerstaff, solid coach. I mean, he took this team from after LeBron left, one of the worst teams in the league, to now I think championship contender. But yeah, I guess top five. And man, they have some pieces on there that, I mean, I am a Donovan Mitchell bandwagon fan, but I think
they're a solid team. Yeah, I just don't know what happened in the playoffs. They were ice cold from the field. They couldn't hit a shot for their life. But we're gonna choose sleepers in the East. I think Atlanta is definitely a team people need to look out for.
I know you're an Atlanta fan. I know you.
Yeah, I mean,
you like some DeJounte Murray, Trae Young action.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I think they were able to figure out how to play along with each other last year in the playoffs. Took Boston to six. They have AJ Griffin coming off his rookie year. He's going to have more time to grow.
AJ Griffin looked nice. As a two-way he did. Wing.
Jalen Johnson, Bogdanovich, who had a heck of a World Cup, probably if not one of the best World Cups that we saw, playing for Serbia. And I think, you know, as long as DeJounte and Trae learn how to play with each other, complement each other's games, Hawks are definitely a team to look out for, because they got the defense and they got the offense.
Yeah, for sure. I think getting John Collins off of your squad, kind of opening up the minutes for DeAndre Hunter, AJ Griffin, I think that's pretty important. Sadiq Bey, who I think is underrated, right. Tough man, underrated next PJ Tucker. But I think we kind of got a little bit off track, a little bit off topic. So now we're going to move on to our next topics, football, but not not football on Sundays, people. We're talking about this football on Tuesdays and Wednesdays because we're talking about Champions League football. And you know exactly who we're going to talk about because when Manchester United is at the bottom of their table, 0 points, they lose to Galatasaray 3-2, and they give up leads not once but twice. I mean, Cash, give me your initial thoughts. Like, is this Manchester United team, like, are they for real? Does Ten Hag have to go?
I think he does have to go, but I just don't know how the board lets him go. You know, he basically reassembled that team from Ajax that he had, which to me, there's no logic in doing that. Playing ball in Netherlands in the Eredivisie is way different than it is in the Premier League. And trying to assemble that team back together and expect trophies out of that, expect a Premier League, expect to compete for the Champions League, to me, just doesn't make sense. But it's too late now to sack him. I mean, he's already created too big of a mess. You got a $55 million goalkeeper who can't save a chip for his life. Casemiro, who's gotten 3 red cards already. Anthony, who's had off-the-field issues and can't perform on the field. Rashford hasn't had the best form this season, but I'd say their one bright spot is Rasmus Højlund. But other than that, I mean, 0 points through 2 games in the Champions League. Still have to play at Galatasaray. Still have to play at home against Bayern. It's not looking good.
Yeah, and if you're looking in the Prem table, I mean, they're 10th. Behind teams like Crystal Palace, West Ham. I mean, they're just above Chelsea right now, which is not a good thing to be saying. But while you say they are, I mean, I agree, they are a dumpster fire. I mean, I feel like there are spots where you can see them improving. I think bringing in Amrabat, bringing in Højlund, like you said, I think Onana, as bad as a performance, as bad as a month as he's been having, I feel like he is one of the best distributing goalkeepers. And I think right now it's taking him time to get integrated into that United squad. But I think he is going to make a difference. I think he can really change the game for Manchester United once he gets integrated.
I just don't know. I feel like that transition, like history shows, players transitioning from the Serie A to a big team like Man United. I won't say like big team in terms of trophies right now. I'll say big team in terms of legacy. But history shows like that it just doesn't work. Like the pressure is just way too much. He had a good amount of pressure playing at Inter, but now it's just that much more. And with a back line that can't defend for their life, I mean, it just makes it so much harder for him.
I mean, I genuinely don't think he's the root of the problem. I think watching
him, but he's gonna get the blame for letting these
watching him at Inter, though. Like, he, yeah, is, no, that Manchester City game, the Champions League final, he played out of his mind. He played great. I think he was a big reason to the Inter success. And I feel like he can replicate that at United. He just needs the time, and I have to agree with you. Like you said, he needs a back line that can support him. Like, he cannot be playing Amrabat at left back. Like, it's just not possible. And they have like 5 left backs on injured, like that is a problem. But you got to get some back line support.
Yeah, I mean, he can replicate that. To an extent, I feel like, replicate his performance at Inter. I mean, you look at that back line they had, and it was just, they were all kind of like, they all complemented each other well. You get Francesco Acerbi, Matteo Darmian, and I think Alessandro Bastoni had 3 center backs playing there. And they all were just perfect in the roles they played in. But here at United, you got Sergio Reguilón, in and out of the lineup. Amrabat, who's a CDM playing left back. Luke Shaw's in and out of the lineup. It's just a mess. And then the center back's injured right now, Martinez. It's a mess. And while I do think he has great abilities on the ball, I don't know if there's a way out of it for me, because it's just, there's too much pressure playing at that this club for him to be playing like that. And that mistake he had today that gave up the winning goal was just outright terrible.
That was quite devastating. But moving on to something that I feel like has been a surprise, but in a different way. Real Madrid winning 3-2 up on Napoli. And I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't see this happening after they lost out on the, or I guess didn't pursue Harry Kane, saving the funds, the Mbappe fund, till next year, and deciding to play Jude as a central attacking midfielder, but really as a striker, as a false nine. I didn't think it was going to work. I thought you'd have to play Joselu a lot at striker, and that just wouldn't work for Madrid, but they've found something that has worked. And I mean, I don't know. I feel like this team right now is just riding this wave and trying to see where it'll take them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a completely different look than they've had for the last 10, 15 years. I mean, they don't have a true striker that they can depend on. So, you know, they play Vinicius, they play Rodrigo up top, and it's worked, but this team just doesn't look the same. Like, they're not able to create the same chances that they did with Vinicius, Rodrigo playing on the wing. And yeah, coming into when these Champions League groups were first announced, this was the game. This is one of the games you'd mark off, because it's at Napoli in Naples, a pretty tough place to play. Napoli coming off, winning the Scudetto in Italy, and they somehow were able to keep Osimhen and
Kvaradona.
Yeah, and here they are. I mean, they don't look bad, but I expected them to win this game. But again, it was a testament to what Real have done so far, and just being able to adapt to new faces and a new formation.
Yeah, and I think coming off the Madrid derby, it's a big win for them. I think you kind of realize that they do need Vinicius, though, just given the pace and the ability that he brings alongside Rodrigo. I think those two are pretty integral to the attack, given that they're two of the three only attacking options that Madrid have. I think it's crazy what they've been able to do. I mean, Bellingham has just been playing absolutely out of his mind. Just the amount of goals that he's been able to score, just the production he's been able to have as a midfielder. I mean, I saw somewhere that he's on pace to equal Ronaldo's goal scoring season when he first joined Madrid. So that's absolutely bonkers for a midfielder. But yeah, Madrid, they, as always, seem to be pulling things out of their hat. But moving on to...
Before we get back to the podcast, I'd like to give a quick shout out to our sponsors at Anchor and Spotify Podcast. They make it easy for us to upload and share all of our podcasts to all the Spotify networks. To check them out, go to SpotifyPodcasters.com and sign up today.
Another surprise this time in Sunday Night Football, or Sunday Football. CJ Stroud, my guy, my baby, Houston Texans, second round pick, and he has been absolutely balling out, man. Absolutely balling out. Cash, I'll give you your first thoughts before I go off.
Yeah, I mean, I think prior to this week, he was still putting up good numbers, but it was this week where, you know, people finally realized that, you know, this guy's the real deal. He's going to be putting up 250, 300 yards a week in his rookie season. Leading the Texans now two straight wins. He's been nothing short of amazing. And the maturity he's shown, you know, the way he conducts himself in his interviews has been really good, really pleasing for Texans fans, I'd say, to hear. But, you know, throwing for 306 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions, against a Pittsburgh defense that's always pretty good, you know, always a top five defense. Yet to throw INT this year, which is crazy for a rookie. I think he sets the Texans up really well for the future, honestly. There's no other way to put it, because just the age of this team and how good he's playing with the resources he has is pretty insane.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just given the fact that he's playing with an offensive line that has been, I think there's one of the projected five starters, one has been playing like consistently. The rest have been on injured reserve, out with injuries for weeks. And so the fact that he's doing this behind a shambles offensive line is even more exciting. And it's just the pocket presence that he has, the ability to just float that ball. And I mean, it's been everywhere on NFL, Instagram, ESPN, but that ball to Nico Collins for that, 30, 40 yard touchdown, that I feel like that play encapsulates CJ. He stand in the pocket and just float the ball right where Nico, only Nico can get it. And that is why I'm just like, I feel like he's a franchise quarterback. And hot take, top 10 quarterback already in the league, I feel like, just given how he's been able to play. And I mean, I guess the production of other quarterbacks, other rookie quarterbacks as well. I feel like
he's definitely been doing really good compared to the other rookie quarterbacks. For me, top 10's a stretch, but I mean, give it a few more weeks, he's putting up these numbers, and yeah, it's just hard for me to call a rookie top 10 right now. But yeah, like you said, playing up behind a banged O line. In addition, I don't think Mechie has even played yet, right?
I mean, he has played a little bit, but he has
limited time. Yeah, exactly. He doesn't even have like the full strength of his receivers yet, which is, it's crazy to just see how easy he's able to process NFL gameplay so quickly.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's the processing, the ability to run as well, the escapability, and also the fact that he's doing this against a Steelers team, against a Jags defense that are, I mean, the Jags were considered to be playoff contenders, Steelers possibly playoff contenders. Texans put 30 on both of them. And even more impressively, the defense held both of those teams below 20 points. And so I think that's a testament to CJ, a testament to the Texans defense, and a testament to D'Amico, because he has his team prepped and 100% ready to go.
Yeah, I think having D'Amico Ryans, you know, he's a great hire. Not many people expected him to be this good this quickly, along with CJ Stroud. I mean, the defense is playing out of their minds right now. And it's really like without any star player, I'd say. It's just they're all doing their job. There's no other way to put it. But a great hire there by the Texans, finding a defensive-minded head coach. And he's also been able to, you know, obviously bring star power offensively. So I think give it a couple years and these guys are back to challenging for the AFC South. But I think for now, I think it's going to be the Jags or Titans division this year.
Yeah, for sure. Not for sure. I don't know about that one. I don't know, especially about the Titans. But hey, those are your predictions. I think the Texans are going to make it to the AFC Championship game, but we can all believe, right? We can all believe. But that's all for this podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure to follow all of our social medias at rewindthattape.com. Make sure to come back and listen to us. We post weekly. Wherever you're listening, we'll be there again. And again, thank y'all so much for watching. Peace.